Five things Rodney learns when he unexpectedly gets transformed into a were-almost wolf. By Anna Girl. The fandom Stargate Atlantis, the pairings Rodney and Ronan, and the ratings teen and up. Summary. Rodney has always said that children are inevitably a bit feral, but he hadn't really meant literally. 1. It's probably not the worst thing that's ever happened to him. Maybe. Making first contact can be a real pain. You can get shot at, exposed to nuclear radiation from shoddy shielding made by stupid people who don't understand the basics of nuclear physics. You can fall into holes, get strung up in traps, get stuck on a prison island. And frankly, you can come back with unfortunate and problematic itching far too often. But this takes the cake. "You can't be serious," Rodney says, feeling increasingly hysterical and maybe a little toothy. "This has to be a joke." John rubs his hand across his eyes. "Sorry, Rodney. I think this one's for real." Taylor nods. "My conversations suggest that this is both true and likely irreversible. The community members did not intend for this to happen, but now that it has, they are both apologetic and remarkably unconcerned." Rodney looks down at his hands, and they're suspiciously hairy. Maybe his fingers are slightly elongated. "This is terrible." "This is the worst thing that's ever happened to me," he mutters. He can smell John's distress and Taylor's confusion. "What a nightmare." "Seriously, McKay?" Beside him, Ronan stretches and takes a deep breath. Rodney looks away from the claws that have extended from Ronan's fingers and briefly wonders what he can smell, if it's more than just their teammates' emotions. Rodney's pretty sure that if he concentrated, he'd be aware of much more, but right now he doesn't want to concentrate. "Worse than being crazy from Wraith enzymes?" Ronan continues. "Or the Collier incident, or having Cadman stuck in your head," John adds. "Is it truly worse than when you recently almost drowned in the sinking puddle jumper?" Taylor asks. Rodney sighs. When they put it that way, this is maybe the fifth worst thing that's ever happened to him. Though he reserves the right to reorder as necessary. "I don't know how else to explain it," Rodney tells Elizabeth. He knows his voice is too loud, and also one of his teeth is digging into his lip, and maybe Ronan is starting to growl a little beside him, although that might be Rodney growling. Whatever. He deserves to be frustrated. "They essentially told us, 'Hello, welcome to our planet. Sorry that our rambunctious children bit you. They're not used to strangers. And did we already say hello? Also, you're a werewolf now. Figure it out.'" Rodney has always said that children are inevitably a bit feral, but he hadn't really meant literally, until now. "And they also said, 'Come back in a few months, we'll throw you a party.'" "This seems to be a remarkably cavalier attitude," Elizabeth replies doubtfully. She smells concerned, maybe also a little dehydrated. It's alarming that Rodney can identify this. "And yet," Rodney points at his fangs, his hairy knuckles, and gestures in Ronan's general direction. "Here we are." "I see your point," she frowns. "Is there any way that we can de-werewolf the two of you?" Rodney sighs. He can feel a headache coming on. Also, he'd like to eat a large hunk of some kind of meat. "This isn't some pesky ancient device that we can just turn off and on again. This is a planet of werewolves. I don't think there's any going back." "They did seem like nice werewolves," John adds cautiously, as though that's some kind of consolation. "Though it is true, they'd smiled and laughed a lot. They'd never heard of the Wraith, had no half-remembered legends about the ancients, and their Stargate hadn't activated for years. And they'd seared a mean side of almost cow. It had tasted even better than it had smelled, and it had smelled fantastic." "I'm hungry," Rodney says, rubbing at his temples. He turns slightly to his right and asks Ronan, "Do you really, really want to eat a large hunk of meat right now?" Ronan doesn't hesitate, just says, yes. Well, it's a relief he's not alone. Maybe the Athosians have something they're willing to trade. Ronan leans towards him, just a little. He seems to have excellent control of his fangs, as they're not in evidence. Rodney thinks hard, and, huh, there his own fangs go, disappearing into wherever, who knows, but it makes his gums itch, and he's not going to think about that. He really should have tried thinking them away earlier. Or, Ronan says quietly, we could go hunting on the mainland. The thought makes Rodney shiver, but in a good way. An excellent suggestion, he says, already striding towards the jumper bay. They can continue their chat with Elizabeth later. Come on, chop chop, let's go, I'm hungry. John, we need a pilot, you're up. Oh, and Elizabeth, you should drink some water. Two, the physics and biology don't make sense, and the fur might be a problem. Realistically, he knows he should be worried about the biological changes he's experienced, worried that there might be other effects besides fangs and claws and fur. Who knows what kind of long-term effects he could experience? He should be pushing hard at Carson to find some way to reverse what's happened. But when he and Ronan get back from the mainland, their hunt successful and satisfying, he realises he's honestly not all that concerned. As far as I can tell, you're completely healthy, Carson tells them. And you're not precisely werewolves. Rodney rolls his eyes. I didn't realise you had a biological database all about real werewolves, Carson. Carson frowns at him. You don't appear to be werewolves in the Earth legend sense. He holds up his hand before Rodney can interrupt. Yes, I know, Rodney. Of course you aren't. We're not on Earth. The point is, there's no evidence your transformation is tied to lunar cycles, given that you appear to be able to change at will. Yes, it's quite convenient, although Rodney still has to think about the transformation a bit too much. It's only been 2 days, Ronan says quietly, low against Rodney's ear. It'll get better. Of course it will. They're well on their way to figuring it out. He assumes everything will get easier with practice, like any talent, really. Though the physics and biology don't make sense at all. Where does all his mass go? He's pretty sure he's lighter in animal form, but with more muscle. Where does the fur go when he changes back and the fangs? How does that even work? It's all nonsensical. And yet. He flicks out a claw just to see it happen, then wills it away. It should hurt, but it doesn't. It's absurd. Also, Carson says a little too loudly, and Rodney looks back at him. When you... He moves his hand in a clawing gesture. When you wolf out, John clarifies, sneezing. Which, while cool, is also incredibly unnerving, and maybe we should... Oh, so wolf out is a medical term now. This is what we're using. When you transform into the animal state, Carson continues even louder, you don't really look like wolves. He holds out a data pad with a photo some enterprising soul had managed to capture. Rodney knows what Ronan looks like as a wolf, as an almost wolf, and he knows the way he moves now as they hunt together, his scent a mix of warmth, fur and focus, mingling with the profile of his muzzle. But it's different, seeing it through human eyes. Their heads are a little too big to be wolves. Their legs are too long, spindly, and it makes him wonder if they look uncoordinated and ridiculous when they run. He doesn't feel that way. He feels fast, powerful, like he could run for hours if he had to. Their tails are shorter than a wolf's, and their ears wider, more turned to the side, rounded instead of pointed. The ears remind him of hyenas, large and alert, almost enough to make them look not at all deadly if it wasn't for their huge fangs, and... Wow, he says, we're really fluffy. Fluffy and silky, their fur wavy and thick. Aye, Carson replies, his eyes almost soft, you really are. Rodney decides not to scoff at him about it. It's been a rough go for Carson lately, what with the whole Michael debacle and the Wraith girl before that. He could probably use a pick-me-up. If that's mooning over Rodney's newly acquired fluff, then so be it. It's a lot of fur, John says. You should. He sounds stuffed up. Three. It's all about the sense, and your co-workers have secrets. He can smell people now, their individual scents and the way they're feeling, if it's strong enough, or if something is a little off. John smells like motion and restlessness. Taylor's wrapped in warmth, security and fierceness. Elizabeth is surrounded by scents that he can only identify as determination and focus, and sometimes a little bit of longing. Ronan, well, Ronan just smells interesting. Rodney tries not to be obvious about the way he breathes a little deeper when Ronan's in the same room, or think too much about the way his shoulders relax, just a bit, when they're together. Though he does admit to himself, quietly, that Ronan has always been interesting, and Rodney had previously been better able to ignore it. Also, it turns out that having the ability to pop out some fine-tipped claws can be surprisingly helpful when doing detailed and technical repair work. "You can stop bragging about that now," Reddick tells him, as they squeeze together under a hatch, trying to fix a recalcitrant energy transfer node that Rodney is fairly certain, although he isn't going to mention it, he had identified in part through a slight change in the frequency of the node's hum. Reddick smells frustrated, intrigued, and a little bit hungry. Some nights, when he's feeling restless or needs to work out a problem without thinking about it too much, Rodney enjoys padding around the city. He likes the click of his claws against the floors, the way he can see into all the darkened corners with his animal eyes. He follows scent trails all over the city, traces where John's gone during the day, the way his scent is ground into well-worn paths between his quarters, the mess, the gate room, Elizabeth's office and the puddle jumper bay. His office in the armory, the gym, and odd little diversions he takes here and there. Out to a quiet balcony, or hovering outside Lorne's quarters. He learns things following these scent trails. He always thinks of Chuck as a gate room fixture, a stalwart behind his console, awaiting the return of off-world teams, careful, focused, and maybe a little bored. But Chuck's scent is all over the city, weaving back and forth through public spaces, a tantalizing hint of what he does when he's not in the control room, who he knows, and where he's going. Sometimes Rodney wonders why he's so active, but mostly he enjoys the puzzle of following the scent trails, both faint and more obvious. When he wanders like this, he often ends up outside of Ronan's quarters. He never has to wait more than a few seconds for the door to open, for Ronan to let him in. Tonight, the door's opening before Rodney even gets there. "Hey," Ronan says and moves out of the way. He reaches down and strokes across Rodney's head, and Rodney knows his fur is just as silky as Ronan's, knows it's hard to resist touching it. He's had to snap at a few hands lately, although truthfully, he mostly doesn't mind, especially when they scratch behind his ears. But people better not get into the habit of thinking of him as their emotional support, we're almost wolf. "You figure out whatever was bugging you?" Rodney shakes and stretches, then thinks about being human again. "I did," he says, once he's standing on two legs. He's got strategies for improving the data access problems they've been having lately. "Chuck really gets around the city, doesn't he? That guy's all over the place." Ronan nods, handing him a pair of loose, thin pants. They've learned to leave something in each other's rooms, because clothes don't stick around when they shift. "I noticed. Who knew?" "Probably Elizabeth. Otherwise, for the rest of us, it's the secret lives of gate technicians." He walks towards Ronan's bed. "You want to go to the mainland soon?" He might love the click-clack of his claws against the city's floors, but sometimes he just wants to pad through the rich soil of the forest, weaving his way through thick stands of trees. He wants the warmth and salt of the blood of small furry creatures in his mouth. It's disgusting. He doesn't talk about it with anyone else and tries not to think about it too much. But he's getting used to it. Maybe it's not really him, the him he was. But it's what he sometimes wants now. "Yeah." Ronan pulls the bed covers up and lies down on his side. "You stay?" Rodney nods and slides into the bed next to him. It's tempting to curl up in animal form, but the fur does get everywhere. So he stays human, and the bed is still warm, it still carries Ronan's scent, and Ronan's a solid, familiar presence at his back. They don't do this every night, but it's getting more common that one of them will show up outside the other's rooms, and they'll curl up like this. Rodney sleeps like the dead those nights. Stays that way for a good 4 or 5 hours. Ronan's nose is at Rodney's neck, and his tongue licks out, slowly and only once, along Rodney's hairline. He relaxes even more and lets himself settle further back into the mattress. A couple of nights later, he walks into his quarters and finds Ronan already lying on the bed. He's in animal form, on his back, gangly legs sticking straight up into the air. His head is hanging over the side of the bed, and it looks both horribly uncomfortable and like possibly the best position ever. He gets undressed and sits on the bed, shoving Ronan over. "You look ridiculous," he mutters, resisting the urge to scratch through the fur on Ronan's chest. Getting settled under the covers is awkward, Ronan grumbling as he's poked and prodded. Eventually Rodney gets comfortable, curled on his side with Ronan around his feet.
"Hey!" He yawns.
"Did you notice who smells like they've been rolling all over Ramirez?" Ronan grumbles again and sneezes. Four. Sometimes life is just easier with claws. Claws, Rodney thinks, as they're stuck in the wraith cocoons, are handy for a variety of things, and if they hadn't been overwhelmed by numbers and reluctant to show their shifts to the wraith just in case, they wouldn't have been in them in the first place. Not so long ago, he knows he'd have been on the verge of panic in this situation, unable to think of anything except a horrible death. It's not that he isn't afraid. They can still die here, and odds are they probably will. But he's angry, too. And even if he's not on equal footing with the wraith, he knows he's closer than he once was. He's also furious, horrified at himself for being stupid enough not to realise that the wraith would infiltrate their systems and find the location of Earth. "I'm responsible for the destruction of my own planet," he says, sick to his stomach. Is this because he's been distracted lately? Caught up in animal form? Is he slipping up? Making mistakes?
"Stop worrying about it now. Just focus," Ronan says, as he slices through the walls of the cocoon.
"Right, right. You don't even need any of those hidden knives," Rodney says as he carefully slices through the walls of his own cocoon, half falling out of it.
"Still good to have them, though."
Ronan pulls away some of the cocoon material that's still sticking to him. He wrinkles his nose. The wraith ship and the cocoon flesh stinks. It's almost as awful as the wraith themselves, a bitter, burnt, acrid scent that settles in the back of his throat. It's tempting to shift into his animal form, but Rodney doesn't want the hassle of having to figure out what to do with his clothes until he needs to change back, so instead they stay human, although Ronan's fangs are down and their claws are extended.
"So what now? How do we get out of here?"
Truthfully, Rodney has no idea. There's probably no way off without... probably no survivable way.
"You'll think of something," Ronan tells him, before he adds, "If we're already dead, I say we take them with us."
Rodney sighs. Better to die a hero than a meal, I guess. Although if they don't get this done soon, he's going to have to eat something, and a wraith doesn't sound appetizing. It's easier to sneak through a wraith ship when you can smell them coming. But then, "Do you smell John?" he asks, as they get to a console. Ronan takes a deep breath.
"Yeah."
"Fuck. Shit. Okay, but that must mean it's our guys attacking the ship."
"It's their guys, sure, but there's also Michael."
Rodney knows he's growling, knows he can't quite stop it, partly in response to Michael just being there, but partly because Ronan's growling too, low and deep, and now isn't the time, he knows that. "Now isn't the time, you two," John says quietly as Michael flies the transport. "Tamp down on it." He does, and then there's no time to think about it. Only time to try and fix the Daedalus, stop them all from suffocating on their own ship. He's scrambling, he knows, trying to fix it, but he and Raddick can only do so much, even with the people they could script into repairs. "It's not going to work," he says at one point, as he breathes the canned, scentless oxygen. It's the first time since the planet that he's not surrounded by the scent of everything, everyone, around him. Maybe it's better not to be able to smell the fear, the anxiety, the faint hope, the blood of injuries, the heat of scorched metal and plastic. But it's confusing. Everything is dull, and for the first time since the planet, he has no idea where Ronan is. He can't figure out his location from scent alone. He argues with Radek, tries not to think about it all as they work frantically, until he realizes there's a place they could go. He blames the stresses of the day and the dulling of his senses for not thinking of it sooner. When they leave for the hive ship, Ronan's behind him, hand on his elbow, and it's a relief, as much as it is to leave the oxygen tank behind. "This place stinks," he says, almost overwhelmed by the sense of the wraith ship combining with the sweat and uncertainty of John, Lorne and the Marines.
"Yep,"
Ronan says as they start through the corridors. "We should go back to the mainland as soon as we can," he mutters as they come across the first ex-wraith bodies. He wants to wrap himself in the sense of green and life, wants to bury his nose against Ronan's fur.
"Agreed."
Five, you're going to want to hunt. Embrace it. "Yes, I am aware," he says, and he knows he sounds peevish, but he doesn't care. There are always repairs to be done, always things that need to be finished right away. He looks at Elizabeth and John, and he knows they don't get it. It isn't their fault, but... "Look, I need this. We both do. Half a day, that's all." He looks over at Ronan, who nods. "Just half a day on the mainland. The scent of dirt and leaves and little fairy things clearing the last of the wraith ship stink away. That half-thinking state as he hunts, working out ideas in the back of his brain. I guarantee I'll be more focused, and we'll be able to figure out how to fly the wraith ship." Elizabeth and John share a look, but then she nods. "Go. Get Lorne to fly you over there. Don't bring back any animals this time," John adds, as if he hadn't relished the stakes after Rodney and Ronan had taken down an extra elk-like animal and brought it back with them after their last trip. "And don't shed all over the jumper again," he yells as they walk away. "Whatever. Rodney doesn't shed that much." "You really do," Ronan says, and Rodney can hear his smirk. "Look who's talking," he responds, because no way was he solely responsible for the state of the jumper last time. Rodney knows better than to roll around inside. There's a lull after the ex-wraith debacle and after Woolsey returns to Earth. Rodney isn't sure how Elizabeth kept the whole "we're almost wolf" thing from the IOA, but so far it hasn't come back to bite them in the ass, unlike a lot of what they've done lately. There's a list, a long list, of things Rodney needs to be working on, including increasing the pace of harvesting space gates. But also,
"We need to go back."
Ronan's arms are crossed, and he looks like he's setting himself up for a fight. Rodney sighs. Back to the planet of feral, biting children. "We do." They could put it off for longer, if they really wanted to. But something's itching at him, at the back of his brain, reminding him they should go, check in, run with the people through dark forests, shake off the recent events with the wraith, the messes, the tension, and just... "Yeah," he says. They go alone, leaving John and Taylor on Atlantis. Risking this on others isn't worth it, no matter how Ronan and Rodney have mostly adjusted, no matter the sometimes advantages of fangs and claws. They walk through the gate laden with the standard basic goodwill gifts and tokens of friendship. The moment it disengages, Rodney takes a deep, long breath. The nagging almost itch settles, recedes as he takes it all in. The scent of the village, a few kilometres away, hangs in the air. He can smell the forest, the dirt, and the local wildlife, including something that calls to him in a way nothing on the mainland has done so far. "Smell that?" he asks, turning to Ronan, his gums and fingertips itching with the urge to shift to his animal form, to run after and bring down the thing that smells so tantalizing. It should horrify him. Once it would have. Ronan's looking at him intensely, eyes narrowed, mouth upturned on one side, his nostrils are flaring.
"Yeah,
we could get it, bring it to the village with us." Rodney nods and walks away from the gate. He sets his pack against a tree.
Wait, Ronan says. He backs Rodney against the rough bark of the tree, hands on either side of Rodney's head, and leans in close. Rodney's been waiting for this, has known it's been coming since he first figured out that Ronan didn't just smell interesting, he smelled interested. Grinning, he tilts his head up and pushes forward, meets Ronan halfway, and then it's the press of lips against his, the nip of teeth, the slide of tongue into his mouth. Ronan tastes as good as he smells, and Rodney groans. He thinks they both do. It would be so easy to forget about the animal, although it's getting closer, and go for it right here, the sense of damp soil and wide grasses tangled around them. But he pushes Ronan back. Is this because? He waves a hand between them, curves his fingers in the shape of claws. He knows the answer, deep down, knows it with a basic, essential certainty. But still, Rodney likes to use his words. Nope. Ronan's watching Rodney intently, one hand resting on Rodney's shoulder, heavy and warm. Rodney snorts. You're so elegant. Really, it's reassuring.
Figured you were maybe doing shepherd before, Ronan shrugs, that you were off limits. But then...
He leans in, nose pressed under Rodney's ear.
I knew you weren't.
Rodney grins and pushes Ronan away again. Good, but later, he says, and gets out of his clothes as fast as he can. The animal is moving away, and they're going to have to run to catch it. Come on, he says, just before he drops to 4 feet. A reminder. Some things really are easier when you have claws. When they get back, happy, relaxed, contented, of course they're greeted by turmoil. People are acting like deranged, dreamy maniacs. The gate room is sparsely manned, and Chuck is barely coherent. He smells almost like intoxication, like chaos and unhinged joy. He drags them to the mess, babbling about how eager Elizabeth is to see them. Not eager enough to meet us in the gate room, apparently, Rodney mutters to Ronan, taking deep breaths, scenting the air. What is that? He sneezes rapidly, repeatedly. Ronan shrugs and looks like he's holding back his own sneezes by willpower alone. The stink gets worse the further into the city they walk, pervasive and settled into corners. What the hell's happened here?
Rodney! Ronan!
Elizabeth gushes as they enter the mess hall. She's hanging off the arm of a stranger who's grinning broadly, rising to meet them, pushing through the throng of personnel surrounding him. Rodney sees Taylor, Carson, Simpson, Raddick. And where the hell is John, for fuck's sake? Is anyone in a lab right now? How long has this been going on? Apparently he can't even leave for 3 measly days before everything falls apart. The stranger's grin is getting wider the closer he gets.
Welcome, welcome, my friends. I've been so eager to meet you. And your furry selves, which I hear are quite adorable in a deadly kind of way.
He's holding out his hand, and he reeks. It's almost overpowering. Rodney can taste the stink, and it's vile.
I'd love to know more, and maybe we could arrange a little visit to the planet where you acquired your interesting abilities to...
Nope,
Ronan mutters, just as Rodney thinks, oh, hell no. And his fangs start to extend, unbidden, his clawed hands reaching out to curve into dull, rough fabric. Lucius Lavin's stay in Atlantis is greatly curtailed. Hey, Ronan says later, as they're dealing with the fallout and monitoring everyone for signs of backsliding and humiliation.
You gonna move in?
Rodney pretends to consider it. Well, I suppose I could, he says finally, grinning. But we'll need a bigger bed. Also, be warned, I've been reliably told I'm annoying to live with, and... He carefully picks a tuft of fur off Ronan's shirt and holds it up.
That I shed.
The end. You can read more by Anna Girl, the author, on AO3.